Hey guys, welcome to season 2, episode 7 of the Where Do I Begin podcast. If you're new here, I am your host Lola, so welcome. And on this episode, we are going to be talking about investing for children or investing for your children's future. If you already have kids or you're currently in the process of thinking of, you know, having kids, and you're thinking about investing early and trying to, you know, give them a bit of a head start in life. So I'm going to go through all of those important bits in today's episode. But as you guys already all know the drill, we do have a lot to get to today. But first, I have to read out this disclaimer. So here we go. All the information presented or spoken about on this podcast is for educational and general information use only. This is not investment or financial advice. Therefore, any information used or discussed should not be interpreted as personalized investment advice. Before making an investment decision, please do your own research, verify information for accuracy, and speak to a financial advisor. Please beware that liability for any investment decisions made falls entirely on you. Any brands, companies, or investment platforms referenced during the duration of the podcast or future episodes are for educational purposes only. This podcast is not sponsored by any of the brands or companies mentioned. Any information or advice given by the guests solely represents the opinion of the guests and is independent of the Where Do I Begin podcast. So now that we've got the disclaimer out of the way, let us get into today's episode. But firstly, I would like to start with a Bible verse that I think beautifully captures what we're going to talk about today. For those who don't know, I am a Christian. And the verse I wanted to start the episode with today is taken from Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, chapter 13, verse 22. And basically it says that a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. I just want us to focus for the first, portion of that verse, which basically talks about a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. So essentially, it's talking about not just leaving an inheritance for your children, but leaving an inheritance for your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, which essentially points to the whole concept of wealth building, building generational wealth, and leaving a legacy behind, right? With that being said, what are some of the reasons people may want to invest, you know, for their children, right? For some, it's to give them a head start, you know, in life when they pass on. For some, it's to teach them about, you know, financial responsibility, teach them about budgeting. For some, it's to have some money sort of set aside for their kids, just in case of an emergency, you know, God forbid if anything happens to, you know, the parents or anything like that, which is why you hear some people also talk about, you know, making sure you have life insurance, for example, especially even when you start the journey of, like, you know, buying a house, or if you work for a private company, you know, making sure you have life insurance just in case, God forbid, something happens. So that your children are not left to sort of bear the burden of, you know, your financial decisions when you pass on. So another reason is to make sure that your children, you know, obviously have an inheritance once you've left. Obviously, we're all working really hard to achieve various things. We all have different goals, different dreams. We want to make impacts in certain areas or in certain spheres in the world, but a part of everything that we're doing, for some of us that do desire to have children at some point or that currently have children, is we're working hard for them. You know, they are part of our entire purpose. They're part of the reason why we exist, right? A lot of the times, when you make that transition from being, you know, single by yourself to, you know, getting married, having kids, or, you know, having kids, if marriage is not something that you subscribe to, the moment kids come into the picture, essentially you do still have your goals and dreams that you're working towards in some cases, but a big part of your purpose at that point kind of turns towards your children, and they become, for a significant period of time, they become the sole purpose of your existence, right? Because you've been entrusted with what I would like to call gifts from God to steward and look after, like, these precious little human beings, and to, you know, raise them in a way that they're responsible members of, you know, society, and to raise them to be good people, and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's important to, I guess, think about, you know, why some parents, or why sometimes when you listen to stories about the wealthy, why they may, you know, leave an inheritance for their children. It's not just so the children don't have to ever work in life to earn anything, but it's also their way of building a culture of wealth, a culture of financial responsibility, a culture of teaching them, you know, that money is a tool, a culture of, you know, planning ahead, you know, for the future, for them and for their kids and for their, you know, grandkids, to make sure that even if they're no longer here for whatever reason, that their families would be well taken care of, their children will be well taken care of, their grandchildren will be well taken care of. And I think it's such a honorable thing to be able to think that far ahead, to want to look after your family, or at least leave a little something for them when you pass on. I know some people, it's a bit of a controversial topic, right? Because some people believe if you leave an inheritance for your kids, they just become spoiled, they don't know the value of money, etc. And some people also feel like, why should I have to leave something for my kids when I've had to work for everything that I've earned, right? So I know it can be a bit of a sensitive and, you know, controversial topic, but I'm of the opinion that you should definitely leave something for your kids. I don't think you should leave so much for them that they don't understand the principles of financial responsibility and the fact that they have to end their way in this world. However, I do think giving them a bit of help, to give them a bit of a head start, I don't see any issues with that, so long as, you know, they're financially literate, and you as a parent have made it a point to make them financially literate and responsible, then I see no issue in, you know, passing on money or property or whatever the case might be, whatever it is, or wealth down the line. So with that being said, I'm sure that a lot of you have heard of trust funds. And for a very long time, I feel like the whole concept of trust funds were sort of associated with the very rich and the very wealthy. But that's not actually necessarily the case at the moment. You know, a lot of parents now have either a trust fund open, especially if they're based in the US, because trust funds no longer exist in the UK. Yeah, so a lot of parents have trust funds open for their kids, or other accounts that pretty much mimic the similarities of a trust fund, you know, for their kids. So yeah, we're just gonna dive into, you know, the different types of investment accounts that are available in the UK and in the US if you are thinking of investing for your children. So for example, I'm sure you've heard of custodial or brokerage accounts for children. Those two mainly exist in the US, and I will touch on that briefly later on in this episode. But given that my main audience, or the majority of the people that listen to this podcast, are actually based in the UK, I will sort of focus on the investment or savings accounts that are available in the UK for children that you as a parent can invest in. So I titled this episode Trust Fund Babies because, as I mentioned earlier, I think that is the only type of account most of us have been familiar with, and most of us have not necessarily really explored, right? Because it just sounds like something that rich people do, and if we don't fall in that bracket of the rich and the wealthy or the ultra high net worth individuals, we don't think we have access to potentially opening trust funds, right? However, it is important to note, as I mentioned earlier, that in the UK, trust funds for children are no longer available to new account holders, as they were replaced by the junior ISAs for kids born on or after January 3rd, 2011. However, if you are based in the US, or if you do relocate to the US at some point in your lifetime, then trust funds still very much exist in the US. However, in the UK, you cannot open a child trust fund. So if there's anybody talking to you about, oh, you should just open a trust fund for your kids and you live in the UK, it's not possible. I am here to tell you it doesn't exist, and it's not possible. So essentially, the term trust fund baby, what does it really mean? Essentially, a trust fund baby is someone whose parents or grandparents have placed assets in a trust fund for them, and they can start accessing the money once they hit a certain age. Usually that age varies from 18 to 21, although I think now it's actually 18. And usually they can have access to the money either at age 18, as I mentioned, or God forbid if, you know, the person that set up the trust fund account passes on, so they can have access to the money. So trust funds are usually included in things like will readings, that sort of stuff. So you might see this play out in some movies or in some Netflix series that you watch, especially if this is not something you've had to experience in your family, where God forbid if a parent passes on and the kid is under 18 and a trust fund has been set up, now it's okay, so who's going to be in charge, you know, of the trust fund, or when does the child get to have access to the money, and this, that, and the third, and it can just cause a lot of issues. Now, as I mentioned earlier, most people assume trust fund babies are spoiled 20 somethings, you know, born with silver spoons, but as I mentioned, that's not always the case, because anybody can essentially set up a trust fund at this point or an investment account, you know, for their children. Whether you're working class, middle class, you know, a high net worth individual, you can set up some form of a trust fund or investment account for your children. Whilst I was preparing for this episode, I did come across Warren Buffett, one of my favorite people, and his philosophy actually when it comes to investing for your children or investing for your children's future. And he basically has this philosophy where he basically states that you should give your children enough to do anything, but not enough to do nothing. So Warren Buffett himself has actually pledged most of his fortune to philanthropy, while his son, Peter Buffett, received $1 billion for nonprofit work and $90,000 in stock for personal use at the age of 19. So that's the man that decided that I did not work this hard to just pass all of this money down to my child to potentially squander it when I'm not here. But he still made sure he left something for his son that, you know, many of us can only dream of in our own lifetime, right? To make sure that the son has enough to, you know, get a head start in life, whether it's to start his own business, work on a passion project, whatever the case might be that he may want to use the funds for. I'm sure he's doing that. Obviously, I don't know what age Warren Buffett's son is now or what he's doing. I'm not that invested in his personal life, but that's just an example of what I was saying earlier about, you know, there is wisdom in leaving something behind for your children. However, it shouldn't be to the point where they have no financial literacy or understanding, or you leave so much money that they just squander it, and it's just like, what was the point? You know, so essentially trust fund babies, quote unquote, do not always live a lavish lifestyle. In some cases they do, but as I said, anybody can literally open a trust fund, so it's not exclusive to the rich and the wealthy. The good thing about trust funds is they essentially help to reduce estate and gift taxes down the line. And they do offer some protection from lawsuits or creditors, and they do keep properties out of probate if somebody does pass on. So there are benefits to trust funds. But again, I have to reiterate, they no longer exist in the UK for children. So if you live in the US, then this is still something that you can definitely still do for your children. If you live in the UK, I don't know if you can open a US trust fund for your child. I don't know if that's a thing. That's something I will have to look into. If you are able to open a US account trust fund for your child and you're resident in the UK, then I'm assuming you probably don't get the tax benefits because you're not a resident of the US. And there are probably other implications and legalities surrounding that you will need to figure out or bypass. So as far as UK citizens are concerned, they no longer have access to trust funds. But for those who actually opened trust fund accounts for their children, or who are beneficiaries of trust funds that their parents opened for them prior to 2011, then I'm sure you're aware that your parents had one or two options, either for a payment schedule where the money is paid to you, you know, either every couple of months, every quarter, whatever the payment schedule was that was agreed, or they just hand over complete and total access in one lump sum, based on the amount that they've invested over the years leading up to 2011, right? Some people that had accounts open prior to 2011 may still have those accounts open, but it is possible to transfer those accounts into an ISA account or any other savings account. You just need to contact them to be like, you know, if you haven't taken the money out, or you've had access to it, but you've just not decided to use the money yet, you can transfer it to another savings account or more current, I guess, savings account. However, what it is important to know is once you make that transfer, so let's say you transfer it to a JISA account, for example, let's say you're still under 18 for argument's sake, you can't convert it back into a trust fund because, like I said, in the UK, that no longer exists. So that's just something else to, you know, keep in mind. There is something else that I think is important for those that have had trust funds open in their name, or those that are looking to open trust funds in the future, especially for those living in the US. There are two types of trust funds. You have the irrevocable and the revocable trust funds. So with irrevocable trust, essentially they cannot be changed once they are set in stone, but they do offer complete protection. Whereas with revocable trust funds, they allow the grantor, which will be the parent in this case, to retain control over the trust, but it will remain subject to seizure in legal circumstances. So if, God forbid, things get complicated or there's some family drama, there's no clarity in the will or anything like that, you know, they do remain subject to seizure by, you know, the federal government in those circumstances. So that's just something else to obviously keep in mind. But to be honest, so long as your affairs are in order and you've done things the right way, you've used the proper lawyers, etc., etc., it shouldn't be a problem if the parent passes on, in terms of how the trust fund is distributed or disseminated. I think the issue usually comes in managing family politics and everybody's emotions, you know, at sensitive times, such as when someone has passed. But usually it should be smooth sailing, you know, if you've done things through the right legal channels. Other people set up, you know, trust funds or investment accounts for children so that, you know, they can save for college or to help them buy their first homes, or as a way to put money away for like the family business, or as a way to, you know, set money aside, God forbid, if somebody ends up getting like a terminal illness diagnosis. Yeah, it's sort of like a form of like future proofing against any eventualities of anything that could potentially go wrong, right? So that is also the benefit of opening an investment account for your children or just a trust fund in general. With what I was saying earlier about how some people, you know, feel some type of way about quote unquote trust fund babies, you know, being afforded a lifestyle that they may not have had the opportunity to access, there's actually a lot of research that suggests that children born into wealthy families are more likely to suffer from anxiety and depression, as well as cope with eating disorders and substance abuse. And a lot of the reasons for this is because from the studies that has been done and the research that has been done, in a lot of cases, these children struggle to find, you know, their identity, to find real friends that are not just after them because of, you know, the money that they have access to, or the wealth, you know, that they have access to, which is why I think what Warren Buffett did for his son is applaudable. And I think even Bill Gates has probably done something similar as well, where they do leave something for their children, but they don't like will their entire wealth to their children, right? You know, to make sure that in the process of trying to help their children get a little bit of a head start, they don't end up destroying their own children, because then I have access to money that they've not ever had to earn, or that they don't know how to manage, etc., etc. So I think that's just something else, you know, to keep in mind. when thinking about the purpose of wanting to set up an investment account or a trust fund? Like, what is your real motive behind it? And, you know, how do you plan on sort of educating your children, making them financially, you know, literate and responsible, and teaching them the importance of seeing money as a tool to be used for good and not something to like squander or not like steward properly. So I think that is something else to definitely think about for sure. So that covers most of the information around trust funds. So what other options are there if you are thinking of investing for your children's future? So as I mentioned briefly earlier, there is a JISA, which is basically a junior ISA account, which is a junior stocks and shares account. And then you also have a cash ISA, which is basically just like a savings account, a normal savings account that you can also use for your kids. We have trust funds, which I've touched on already. You have custodial accounts, which I will touch on later, both custodial and brokerage accounts. You have children premium bonds. This is another one that I don't think exists anymore in the UK, but I'll double check my notes for that. You have a junior SIP account, which can't be accessed before the age of 55. So that's basically almost like a retirement account for your children. So a lot of people don't know that you can invest in your children's retirement as well. I think that's a bit much. I don't know if I'll be investing in my future children's retirement. Sorry, I don't have any kids yet. Yeah, I don't know if that's what I would be doing. I'm still trying to invest in my retirement, but that's a whole different conversation. I don't think you need to go that far, but obviously if you have the money, then why not? I think it's a good thing. In the US, I think the equivalent of a junior SIP would be the IRA. So I think it's called the Roth IRA investment fund or something like that, where you can invest in your children's retirement. And I think this just shows you as well, like, especially with that Bible verse that I read out earlier about a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. You know, you thinking about a retirement account, you're really thinking far, like, to invest, you know, for your children. And I think it's admirable. I just don't think that's something I would personally do, but that's my personal opinion. If I have the funds for it, then maybe something I would consider. I don't know. But I did think that was interesting. But yeah, you can open a retirement account for your children and start investing for their retirement early. It's just that they cannot access it until the age of 55. So yeah, if you're blessed financially in that way, that is something you can definitely do. I know some people would have questions about, you know, relatives and grandparents, you know, opening an ISA for their children, or wanting to, grandparents that may want to invest on behalf of their grandchildren. They can contribute, but they can't open accounts, essentially. So you as the parent has to open an account for your children, and then the grandparents can contribute towards the account that is already opened by the parent, if that makes sense. So yeah, I know in the US you can gift like stocks, bonds, shares, that sort of stuff. I don't think that is a common practice in the UK. I have been doing a lot of research around that to see if you can really gift like a stock and shares, you know, ISA, and I haven't seen anything that sort of points to you being able to, you know, gift that, even if it's just not an ISA, just gifting stocks and shares in general. I don't think that that is a normal practice in the UK, but I'm sure it has something to do with the regulatory laws. But in the US, I know that that is definitely very common practice. But yeah, that's something I can look into a bit more, maybe in future, for future episodes, to see, can you actually gift like stocks and shares in the UK? So yeah, I'll probably make a mental note of that for myself to look into. And once I have an answer, I might do an episode on it for you guys. So let's talk about a cash ISA or JISA. JISA is junior ISA, as I mentioned earlier, because that is what is relevant for the UK audience of this podcast. So essentially, a JISA comes in two options. So it can be a cash JISA or a child investment ISA, also referred to as a stocks and shares JISA. I know that sounds like I'm saying JISA multiple times. Hopefully you're not confused. But anytime I say JISA, it's basically just junior ISA account, which is stocks and shares. However, A cash JISA, which is cash only, is basically just a normal, ordinary savings account. It's not different at all. The interest that you earn on it might be a little bit better, but only by a fraction. It's basically just a standard savings account. Whereas a junior stocks and shares ISA, you're actually investing in stocks and shares on behalf of your child. So that is the difference there. And as I mentioned earlier, grandparents can contribute, or other relatives can contribute to an existing JISA account or cash JISA account that has been opened for a child. Friends can also actually contribute to a child's financial future. So, you know, if your child has a godmother or godfather that wants to, you know, put some money aside, you know, for your child, then that's something that they can do in an existing cash ISA or JISA account that you as the parent has opened for your child. It's just that they cannot actually open the account, but it has to be the parent that opens the account, and then they can, you know, contribute towards it. Essentially, the money you put in a child investment account or in the stocks and shares JISA is essentially the same as putting money into a trust fund. So that's the new UK's version of a trust fund. And as I mentioned, they will not have access to the funds until their 18th birthday, after which a junior ISA can turn into a standard ISA account. However, the child in question can manage the account themselves once they've reached the age of 16. I think that's left to you as a parent in terms of how financially literate you think your child is, and responsible to be able to manage their finances by the age of 16. So that should be left to the discretion of the parent to decide. Do you want them to start managing it at 16, or do you want them to start managing it at 18 when they have access, you know, to the account? I know that for some parents, another challenge that you might be thinking is, okay, I do want to invest for my child, but, you know, what should the investment strategy be? And to be honest, the simple answer is it all depends on why you want to invest for your child. So like I mentioned, if you're investing for the sole purpose of education, then it's a bit clearer, you know, which account you should go for. So platforms like Vanguard allow you to invest for your child's education, for example, or even invest for your children's wedding, and you can even invest for your own wedding, to be honest. And they have details of the different types of account that will help you to achieve that, right? And this is where short-term and long-term investments, you know, come into play. So depending on what your investment goal is what will determine whether it needs to be a short-term investment or, you know, a long-term investment. Obviously, other things that need to be considered are things like, you know, inflation, and investment product, you know, options, and how much you can actually afford to put into the account, you know, each month. I think that will also determine the type of account that you can open for your children. But ultimately, the most important thing to remember is to always pick a financial services company and financial products that are authorized and regulated by the FCA, which is the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK. And when in doubt, please do always make sure you speak to a financial advisor, as I always say in my disclaimers. So yeah, if somebody recommends a platform for you to use to invest for your child or for your children, always do checks. Usually at the bottom of websites, you should be able to see that they are regulated by the FCA. There should be a statement at the bottom of the page in small print. If you're not sure, you can always just look up the company or the firm or the platform on Companies House to establish that they're actually a legitimate firm that is regulated by the FCA, or just go to the FCA's website just to ensure like that layer of protection is there before obviously you put money into any of these platforms, because there's quite a few of them, and these are questions I've been asked privately. Is this a legitimate, you know, platform? Should I use this? Should I use that? So that is something to definitely, you know, pay attention to for sure. Verify that the platform is legitimate and, you know, regulated by the FCA. So the main advantage of a JISA, if I didn't mention it earlier, is that it's essentially a tax wrapper account. So it is not subject to income or capital gains tax. So basically anyone that wishes to contribute to the investment can do so, providing that the total contribution per annum is no more than £9,000. It's also worth noting that contributing to a JISA for your child does not affect your own personal adult ISA account. So they are treated as separate, you know, accounts. So no need to worry if you're putting more in for your child than you are for yourself, that it would impact, you know, your ISA account. It won't. And if you are concerned about the risk of investing rather than saving for your children, you can open a junior cash ISA and a junior investment ISA account. So meaning basically, let's say you have £3,000 to invest, you can put £1,500 in a cash ISA and then £1,500 in the junior investment ISA account. So that way you get some exposure to invest in, but you also have the buffer of just a standard savings account where your capital is not threatened because of movements in the market. So that way you're able to split the risk. So it's another way to diversify the funds, essentially. The only thing to note is if you do want to split the investment in this way, where one is in a cash ISA and one is in a junior investment ISA account, then it's important for you to note that you cannot open both accounts in the same year. So for those who want to do this and want to split any risk that's associated with investing, what you can do is maybe in 1 year open a cash ISA and then in the following year open a junior investment ISA account for your child, and then after that you can obviously, anytime you have an influx of money that's coming that you want to invest in, whether you're investing in quarterly or monthly, whatever the case is, then you just split the amount in those two accounts simultaneously. But initially when you start, you can only open one account per year, basically. So I hope that that makes sense. Some platforms may also offer social responsible investing accounts for children. So if that's something that you're interested in, you know, some platforms offer that. I think Money Farm may offer that, but you know, you can do your research around that if you want to make sure like the investments that you have on behalf of your children have some sort of social responsible, ethical, I guess, impact. Then you know that is available as well. So most people will now ask you, how much should you be putting aside to save and invest towards your children's future? I think this essentially varies depending on everybody's financial situation. So I find it very difficult to just give like a specific number. But a good starting point would be maybe setting aside 3% to 5% of your net monthly income if you can afford it. Obviously, I know we're in a recession right now, we're in trying times, so that's probably not feasible. Or maybe 3% is feasible and 5% is not. Or 2.5% is feasible and 3% is not. I think everybody just needs to sort of assess their financial situation and see what you can afford to put aside from your netly income after expenses, bills, all of that has been paid. So for argument's sake, if you have a joint household income of like £6,000 after the taxes, putting aside 3% to 5% would be putting aside maybe £180 to £300 a month. For some people, they'll be like, oh, that doesn't seem like a lot. But honestly, the law of compounding, it is a lot over 18 years, 20 years, if you just put the thing on direct debit, you know. Whereas for some, £180 and £300 a month might seem like a huge amount to put aside. So for some, it might be £50 to £100 that you're putting aside, especially in cases where, you know, you just have a newborn. Like, diapers are expensive, baby food is expensive, you know, so you might not be able to do £180 or £300 to start. But even if it's £50 you can put in there a month, or £100 you can put in there a month, that's still something. And then once the expenses decrease as your children grow older, or some expenses decrease depending on the lifestyle that you live, etc., or let's say, you know, one of the parents or both parents, you know, they got a promotion at work, so now they have more disposable income and they have more to put in this investment account, then obviously you can increase that at any point as well to 180, 300, or maybe even £500 per month if you're so blessed. So I don't think you should feel guilty if you're not able to put a significant amount when you first open this investment account. The 3% to 5% is honestly literally just a guide and will vary depending on everybody's, you know, financial situation. So I think so long as you're making the effort to put something aside, that is what is ultimately important. And you know, if you raise responsible, kind children, they'll be more than grateful that, you know, you can even give them this money at the age of 18, or for them to know, like, okay, I have enough for a deposit, you know, to purchase a house, or I have enough for uni where I don't have to take out student loan, whatever the case might be, whatever the goal might be. But 18 years is a long time to be saving, you know, £180 and £300 a month. You know, so it is a significant amount. Plus you're earning interest on top. So it is a significant amount and a huge gift to basically leave for your children. So yeah, as a parent, I will not feel guilty if right now all I can put aside is, you know, £50 here or £100 there. So I just think that that is something to, you know, be mindful of, for sure. So I just wanted to touch on trust funds briefly again. For those who, as adults now, know that their parents open trust funds for them, that have not accessed it yet, but they just know it exists somewhere. A child was born between 2002 and 2011. There is a possibility that they may have a child trust fund. And once you're an adult, obviously this can be transferred into an adult ISA. So if you are an adult that has a trust fund that's, you know, dormant somewhere or whatever the case is, and you're not sure what to do with the money because, you know, you just haven't decided, you have quite a few options in terms of what you can do. You can either move it into a standard adult ISA account, or maybe even a LISA account. And the only thing is, if you move it into a LISA account, you can only use that money either to purchase a home or for your retirement. So you can't access it until the age of 60. But obviously, if you're using it to purchase a home, you can access it before that. I think most of us know how a LISA account works. If you don't, just slide in my DMs. I'm happy to explain or send you some resources to explain that to you. So that's one option. The other option is, once you have access to the trust fund account, you can choose to invest the money as an adult. So you can choose to continue to grow that money and invest it, which is why this podcast is useful, because, you know, I have been doing this for how many episodes in? We're probably like 17 episodes in, and I've been sort of educating people and trying to help people to get started on their investing journey. So you can use some of the knowledge from that to invest your money as an adult, or open another savings account to continue investing in that way. But obviously, if you want to grow the money quickly, then investing is the best route to go. Or the final alternative is to spend it, but spend it wisely. So if you're spending it, maybe you'll be spending it on a house or on a car or on your wedding, or I don't know, on student loan, whatever the case might be. But those are the options essentially that you have in terms of what to do with your money. So I'm just going to touch briefly on the accounts that are available in the US for children. So as I mentioned, trust funds do still exist in the US. So, you know, if you're based in the US or you ever, you know, relocate to the US, then a trust fund is something that you can definitely open for your children. Sometimes trust funds can also include assets you want to pass on to your children, like, you know, a house, real estate, or any other kinds of properties essentially that you own. You can pass on property to your children via a trust fund. With trust funds, you often need a lawyer and possibly an accountant to help set it up, since the assets are legal setups. And as I mentioned earlier as well, it will most likely be included in your will. So usually, more often than not, you need a lawyer. An accountant is optional, but sometimes you need both. So yeah, trust funds exist in the US, and that's, you know, a type of investment account you can open still for your children. Another account you will come across is a custodial account, which in the US is also known as a 529 plan for your children. So essentially, a 529 savings plan is a type of investment fund that allows parents to both save and invest in their child's education with the addition of tax benefits. So this is a savings plan that is specifically if you want to save for, you know, your children's college. So as you know, in the US, they don't have the concept of student loans is a bit different to what we have in the UK. So a lot of people, they're either borrowing from private companies or banks to pay for their tuition, Whereas in the UK, the government gives you up to a certain amount. And then if you need extra, either your parents are supporting you or you're now borrowing from private bank or private company to support you with whatever it is that you have outstanding. In the US, you're essentially paying for everything for yourself. So for those in the US, you can open a 529 savings account. Where you're essentially investing ahead of time for their college education or for their uni education. So in the UK, we refer to college as university, but obviously in the US, you guys call university college. So that's just like the distinction there. So yeah, that one is solely for the purpose of your children's future education. There is also custodial or brokerage accounts, which I mentioned briefly earlier. And they are also known as the Uniform Gifts for Minors Act, which is UGMA. Essentially, that act allows you to open up an investment account on behalf of your children. These types of accounts are often called custodial accounts, as I mentioned. And this type of account allows the owner of the investment to be the child. But you, as the guardian or custodian of the account, are allowed to manage the account until your child is old enough to take it over. So in a way, it's kind of similar to a JISA as well, because essentially with a JISA, you're managing the account until they're old enough to take it over, right? So I guess the UK versions of a custodial account would be a JISA. So if you were ever like looking online and you're like, oh, what's the difference between a custodial account and a JISA? They're pretty much similar things. They're just called different names. Because in the US, they will call it a custodial or brokerage account, whereas in the UK, you call it like a JISA account. So they're pretty much, you know, similar. It's just different names, different countries. So yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, you can invest or create a retirement account for your children as well. In the UK, that is known as a junior SIP account. But in the US, that is known as a Roth IRA account. It may seem a little early to start a retirement fund for children, but some people will tell you it's never too early to start. And they will say the sooner you start, the better. So yeah, you can open in the US, this is called a Roth IRA account that you can open in your child's name, and essentially you're investing for your children's retirement. And I guess you do as much as you can, and once you transition, then they can, you know, continue on. So yeah, and I think another important thing to touch on would be the concept of gifting property. So some people may not necessarily be able to put money aside because they're focusing on paying their mortgage off completely, and in their mind what they would want to gift to their children is property, as opposed to, you know, an investment account for their children or a retirement account for their children. And that's still an amazing gift to give to your children, which is property. So the way to go about that is selling you know, the house or the property to a family member, i.e. your child, when they're old enough, below its market value. So that can minimize, you know, the issues surrounding inheritance tax, etc. I will go through I guess what the thresholds are when it comes to inheritance tax, when it comes to like gifting money or, you know, gifting property in a short while. But essentially you can gift any amount of money as you like to friends, family members, so long as you do not benefit from that action in any way. Those are the only ways to make sure that you avoid being charged tax on those amounts, right? If possible, the advice would be to avoid large amounts of tax being payable on that gift. And, you know, most financial advisors will essentially tell you whatever amount you want to gift, just make sure it's under the inheritance tax threshold. So if you know what the threshold is per year, then you just don't give over that amount to avoid having to pay any, you know, tax on it, because then it kind of defeats the whole purpose, because you're losing money if you gift over the threshold. So yeah, as a suggestion, some people give small cash gifts to children of up to £250 a year. That is a tax-free gift allowance that you can give, which means you can essentially gift your children as well up to £3,000 a year as a gift that is, you know, tax-free. If that is what you choose to do, as opposed to opening a junior ISA account If you just have a normal child savings account and you want to gift them money, you know, you can gift up to £3,000 tax-free essentially per year. If you are gifting money to older children, you can gift up to £5,000 to your older children, you know, for let's say their wedding, for example. That is also tax-free. And if you choose to do so, you can combine this with, let's say, you'd been gifting your children a £3,000 annual gift allowance up until the point where they get married, then you can combine that £5,000 with the £3,000 annual gift. So essentially, you could gift up to £8,000 tax-free. So essentially, gifts, cash gifts, are not classified as income. So which means your children are not liable to income tax or capital gains tax, as some people would call it. Grandparents can also gift their grandchildren up to £2,500 as a wedding present, whilst other family members and friends can gift up to £1,000 as well, tax-free. Obviously, these things only apply if they're actually putting it into a specific account, like a tax-free account such as a JISA. But obviously, if you're just doing direct transfers from one bank account to another bank account, there's technically no limit. The bank may flag it if it's beyond a certain amount, and it's just for you to give an explanation for why the transfer has been made. But if you are putting the money into, let's say, like a JISA account, for example, then the amounts I just mentioned are the thresholds that you need to be, you know, aware of. So for older children, if you're gifting them for their wedding, you can gift up to £8,000 tax-free, essentially. For younger children, you under 18, you can gift up to £250, I think, a month, tax-free, if it's going into a JISA account. Now, what happens if you want to gift your children or your child a lump sum of £20,000? If you want to do that, there is definitely tax implications, because essentially any money that you give that exceeds the £3,000 tax free gift allowance will be added to the value of your estate, and may be subject to inheritance tax when the giftor, which would be the parent in this case, sort of passes on. So inheritance tax is not something that's necessarily applied immediately after the gift has been given. It applies usually if the person sort of passes on within 7 years of gifting the amount. So essentially, if you were to give a £20,000 cash gift to your children or your son or daughter without paying gift tax, you will need to live for more than 7 years after making your gift. So the only way your children avoid that inheritance tax is if you're still alive 7 years after you gifted them the lump sum of £20,000. However, if, God forbid, you as the parent pass on after 7 years of making the gift, then your children may be subject to the inheritance tax. So what are the tax rules, I guess, for giving larger gifts or lump sums? Yeah, so if you're gifting large amounts, and large amounts will constitute, I guess, maybe between 10K and above, because as I mentioned earlier, you can gift up to £8,000 tax-free, depending on how you do it. You might be able to stretch that to 10K, but anything over 10K essentially will be considered a large cash gift. So there are tax rules, you know, applied to that. So essentially, any amount you give above 10K, I would say, would be subject to inheritance tax or just a general tax rate. If the giftor or the person that does the gifting lives less than 3 years between when they gave the gift and when they passed on. So if the person lives less than 3 years, the tax rate would be 40%. If the person lives 3 to 4 years after the gift, the tax rate will be 32%. 4 to 5 years after the gift will be 24%. 5 to 6 years after the gift was given will be 16% tax rate. 6 to 7 years after the gift was given will be 8% tax rate. And then 7 years or more after the gift was given, there is no tax or inheritance tax applied. It's basically 0%. So essentially, if you give a large amount of cash to your children, whether it's in form of property or just a lump sum, the only way your children will not pay inheritance tax is to make sure that you are still living 7 years or more after the gift was given. So this is something that you can try to plan for to make sure that your children don't pay inheritance tax. But as we know, sometimes life happens and you just can't predict these things. But you know, if you're in good health, this is something that you can time it essentially. But if you do have you know, underlying health conditions, then this is something to consider in terms of when you do the gifting, as to what the inheritance tax rate would be. Now to talk about the other side of, I guess, the not so pretty side of gifting children or opening investment accounts for children. There may be cases where you don't feel like your children are financially savvy enough to sort of let them take over, let's say, I don't know, the investment account that you've opened for them. If that's the case, you can apply for a power of attorney or for a court order to make sure that the children do not have access to the account once they're 18 without, I guess, your permission or without your say. So that offers parents an extra layer of protection if you feel like, okay, your children are not ready enough to mentally or emotionally, you know, handle this large amount that you have invested over the years on their behalf. You know, you can definitely apply for a power of attorney, which will essentially require your signature before they can access the account for anything. So that gives parents like an extra layer of protection on behalf of their children. In some cases, the reason why a power of attorney is also useful is if the child or the children have any sort of disability where it's not a situation of financial literacy, it's just they cannot manage it due to a disability, then the power of attorney helps you to be able to continue to sort of manage the account on behalf of the child. So that is a positive thing in that there is that layer of, you know, protection. I mentioned children's bonds earlier on, and yes, I can now confirm that these savings account or these savings bonds are no longer available. But essentially, when they were available, there was no tax to pay on the interest or the coupons earned on the bond. They were usually 5-year bonds with a fixed interest payment on them every year. The interest payments were fixed. So when you bought the bond, you'd know in advance how much they would grow during the term of the bond, which would be the 5-year term of the bond. And it was only parents, guardians, grandparents and great grandparents that could buy these bonds for anyone under the age of 16. A parent or guardian had control on, and I think you could invest between £25 a month to £3,000 per bond issue in £25 units per child. So when they existed, that's essentially how they work. I won't be surprised if there are premium bond accounts that still exist in the US. You know, the US just seems to have more options about these things in general. So if that is something that you're looking to invest in, and you're based in the UK, these no longer exist in the UK, but they definitely exist in the US. So if you do have, I guess, if you're somebody that, I don't know, works remotely, you know, in the US and that sort of stuff, or then you can potentially, you know, have a premium bond account for your child that you invest in as a result of the fact that you have the right to work in the US, basically. But yeah, you would just need to check the legalities around that. However, if you are somebody that was gifted a premium bond and now you're an adult and you're not sure what to do with it, you still have a few options, even though the product technically no longer exists for those that are interested in investing in premium bonds for their children. So you can renew the bond by reinvesting the value of the bond plus the interest. You can cash in part of the bond and leave in the other half of it to be reinvested, or you can just cash in all the bond and again put into either a standard savings account or start investing as an adult, or cash in on the bond to put money down on deposit for a house or a car or whatever it is that your goal is that you want to use the money for. So for those that have been gifted premium bonds, even though technically it no longer exists because the account was opened before it was closed to new users, you can still cash in basically on that bond. You can still redeem the bond essentially. Those are a few options on what you can do with the bond. For those couples that are either separated, divorced, or not married and maybe going through issues, and you had previously been putting money, you know, collectively together in the name of your child. If a separation or a divorce occurs, or you're just no longer together in general, this is something that you both need to do, in terms of like, you will need to inform the bank or the government essentially about changes to your circumstances. The money in the account definitely still belongs to the child, but essentially the courts will need to get involved to ascertain the fact that the money is definitely for the child, regardless of the domestic issues that may be happening between, you know, the parents, right? So if you're in that situation, so long as you inform the bank and the government, they can ensure that that money is only used essentially for the child. There can be a court order, the account can be freezed, especially if you're in a situation with a partner that may want to have access to the money because you're no longer together, and they may want to use it for any other reason aside from the child. Obviously these are not fun topics to talk about, but this is something to be aware of, that in some cases there are people who will put money into a child's account without ever intending to pass it on to the child, as a result of them just wanting to, you know, gain the benefits that come with the tax benefits that come with investing into a child's account, right? Or as a way to just be petty, you know, towards your partner now that they're no longer together. There are protections that can definitely be put in place for that, which is why I said, you know, both parties, or the party that intends for the money to still be passed on to the child, can definitely take that up by informing the bank of the change of circumstances and seeking mediation. If mediation doesn't work, then obviously naturally it can be escalated to the courts, but obviously I do hope nobody's going through that. But if that is the case, that there is a solution, you know, to make sure that the money is just used for the child and not squandered on anything else other than the child's future, essentially. So hopefully that brings some comfort. If you're listening to this and you are in that sort of situation, if you are getting divorced or dissolving a civil partnership, then there are limited circumstances. Children's savings accounts might be included in the financial assets to be split. So essentially, usually they're not included, but every now and then you may get a situation where it is included as part of the general assets that need to be split between both partners, where it's now like, the mom has a separate investment account for the child and the dad also has a separate investment account for the child. I don't know what the splits are. I'm not a family lawyer. I don't know if they'll do it 50-50, 70-30. I don't know. I don't work in family law, but usually it is not considered. They do try to leave the children's savings account or investment accounts out of it. But in some cases, it may be considered. What will cause them to consider that? Again, I don't know. You would need to speak to a lawyer about that, and they can explain why it has been considered in that case. Because again, in some situations, there's been ex-husbands or ex-wives that have deliberately put their own money into a child's account to stop the other partner from, you know, getting access to the money in the case of a divorce, where assets have to be quote unquote split in a fair manner. So even though there was money that was put in there deliberately for the child, an ex-partner can also decide that they want to put their own personal funds in the child's account so that they have protection from it being considered as part of like the divorce proceedings and assets that need to be split. You know, people try to find loopholes around the law, which is not great, especially when you're in this kind of situation. Then you can ask the bank to sort of put a temporary freeze on the account. That's if you both have access. Obviously, if you both don't have access to it and it's just one partner that has access to it, then that is something that you will need to look at, you know, with lawyers. And yeah, essentially, it is important to get professional advice if you're unsure on what to do in this situation. But I just thought it's something to be mindful of, because whilst, you know, it's an exciting prospect to put money aside and invest for your children, sometimes life happens and things don't work out. And these are just the things to, you know, sort of keep in mind. So that essentially brings us to the end of today's episode. But just quickly, if you are thinking of platforms to use or that you can use to open, you know, a JISA account for your children, then you can look at Wealthify. I think they are the award-winning platform for children's accounts. You can look at any standard retail bank. So whether it's your Santander, NatWest, HSBC, they all have junior ISA accounts on offer. And you can look at Money Farm as well. So those are the three off the top of my head that you can look at. But again, do your research, see what the products are offering, what the returns on the investments would be, you know, what kind of access you will have to the account, etc., etc. You can have more detailed information on their respective websites to look at concerning that. So yeah, essentially, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. I hope it was helpful. I hope it was inspiring in some ways to, you know, help you start thinking about investing for your children's future and leaving a legacy behind, and, you know, just the importance of generational wealth and building, right? So I hope it was useful in that sense. And I do apologize in advance as well for those who may have been triggered, especially towards the latter end of the episode. It was something I sort of battled with myself about whether to discuss or not. But there are people in these situations, and I just wanted to let them know that there is a solution, there is a way out, even though I may not be able to give great detail because I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, there is a way to go about, you know, doing these things. So yeah, I've really enjoyed doing this episode for you guys, although it's a bit of a bittersweet one. But yeah, I do hope that you leave this episode not feeling down, but comforted and optimistic about the future. And so yeah, thanks again for listening. And if you have any questions about anything that I discussed in this episode, please do feel free to, you know, reach out to me, and I'll be more than happy to answer those questions or point you to the people who may be able to answer the questions if I'm not able to answer them. So yeah, please do like, follow, share, subscribe, leave a comment, leave a review, all that good stuff. The Instagram page is where do I begin_pod. So you can reach out to me on there, or you can send an email at info.wheredoibegin@gmail.com. And yes, I look forward to hearing your feedback on this episode. So yeah, speak to you guys soon. Take care. Bye.